Webster's Dictionary defines a podcast as an episodic series of spoken word digital audio files that a user can download to a personal device for easy listening.
Yo, are you downloading this to a personal device right now?
More true.
That's you wouldn't the worst download a podcast. Idea
we have ever. In women's tennis, I always root against the heterosexual.
Hello and welcome back to Kill James Bond, a podcast in which we read...
An episodic spoken word format thing,
where we read the Wikipedia definition of a podcast as a cold open.
Definitionally, we are a podcast.
That's
definitionally
right.
We are now, I think, the third most popular movie podcast in the UK. Is that right?
It's movie reviews. Podcast. Yeah, because yeah. I put us
movie
in...
Movie podcast is.
Even better.
I put us in the movie reviews category because the comedy category was just filled with just like...
God, can you imagine if we were in the comedy category?
Yeah, filth. And obviously, we don't approve of that. We are a good Christian podcast, and as such, we will be...
Against such podcasts as Trash Future and... The Romaniacs.
Mm-hmm. We occupy the charts.
The Labour Party podcast.
Does the Labour Party have a podcast? It might. Have.
They must do. Official
Momentum
they must
podcast.
Do.
Well, in any case, we occupy the number three spot now.
I straight up
UK
wonder what the Momentum podcast is about these days because it's not like they're relevant.
We'll never know.
In an ideal world, it would be about getting owned and the lessons to learn from getting owned. But we're not doing that. We're doing a James Bond podcast. And it's a bonus episode, but because we're not Trash Future, we're not going to do the voice when there's a bonus episode. Mm-hmm. No, they haven't earned that. So at Abby's instigation, we have watched Val Kilmer's Big Break, Top Secret.
I love that attempt to pin this on me, just in case it doesn't work, listeners.
Was your idea? Okay.
That was my idea, because I like this film, and I think it's interesting. You did OSS 77, yes. And it was a triumph. So.
Thank you. So we've got sort of English language OSS 77. We have a Bond spoof. Although not just Bond. This is more sort of broadly targeted than OSS 77 is, because it's got Bond movies in it, it's got like World War II movies, and it's got a little bit of Indiana Jones, and it's got Elvis movies, which
odd choice to satirize those in the 80s, but I mean they went for it and it works.
Yeah,
like,
this is a Zucker, Abraham Zucker production, and you may be familiar with them as the guys who did Airplane, which is
Police Squad
Police Squad, which is one of my favorite TV shows of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And was very, very influential for me as a writer, which I'm sure we'll get into that story later.
Yeah. And this is their Bond thing. They got then relative unknown Val Kilmer to play this sort of himbo?
Absolute smoke show. 1984 Val Kilmer.
25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
First film role.
1 year older than me, so I'm not Cradle Robin here.
He's incredibly hot. He's incredibly hot in this film. Like, normally, in order to get a jawline like that, you'd have to look at a trans woman, but like Val Kilmer pulls it off.
Yeah, he has the like sensitive Chad jaw in this movie.
Oh, he really
he's like been
does.
Doing jaw
exercises.
He does exercises.
Look like the drawing of the Chad.
He does. Yeah, he's like wearing the like ouch t-shirt and like lime green pants.
Oh. I've got an ouch tank top.
Hell yes.
Oh, I would love one. I tell you what, yesterday I told Alice this off stream, but yesterday when I was walking through town, I saw a woman wearing a shirt that just said Strong Girls Club, and I was like, I am purchasing one of those shirts immediately so I can cut the arms off.
Yeah. So this is, I don't know, our usual thing on this podcast is I summarize the plot of the movie and you two riff on it, and then we talk about what we think. The problem with that is that this movie doesn't have a plot.
It's like
doesn't.
Window dressing. It's
it
an excuse
doesn't.
To
it
do
doesn't.
The sight
this is,
gags.
Yeah, this is the thing, right? This is probably the most of the Zucker Abraham Zucker movies, this is the one that can resist a sight gag the least, and there is no joke too cheap for this movie to make. And so therefore, the plot, entirely ancillary, right? And if I try and summarize it scene by scene, it's going to be ridiculous. So what I'm going to do is, instead I'm going to give you the sort of the pressy, which is Nick Rivers, this sort of Elvis figure, but also kind of the Beatles, this Western rock
and the
star,
Beach Boys.
And the Beach Boys, yeah. Has been brought to East Germany, which is also Nazis.
Yeah, they just...
Yeah, it's very confusing
Nazis
this.
Apparently in the German dub of this, they had to like excise and rewrite whole segments of the script because it just didn't read to a German audience. Like the joke that like East Germany and Nazi Germany are the same, you showed that to a West German audience and they're just like, what? That? And I mean, this is...
doesn't make sense.
Like, no, all the Nazis were on our side.
Yeah.
All the Nazis were elevated into the West German High Command. Come on.
All the Nazis in the theatre are like, well, this is offensive.
Yeah.
Come on now.
I mean, I'm not gonna like get that, on my surely. High horse about this movie being like an insult to German culture, particularly when it's the product of three Jewish comedians, which is incidentally why a lot of the dialogue is Yiddish. There's a lot of like fake German in there that is just like Yiddish swearing. But the sort of the level that the level of laughs you're getting out of German is like this, right?
Wir haben Pflichtmitten und der Heiner Blatzen. There is Sauerkraut in my Lederhosen.
I don't know. I think a little bit of a narrative summary is nice because people like to have a narrative to tune into when they're listening to a podcast.
Sure. So Nick Rivers is with his manager. They go to East Germany, and you get fully like the sort of stopped at customs scene where a bunch of guys in like Nazi uniforms and like steel helmets tell them, "You have to watch what you say in East Germany, Mr. Rivers."
Mm-hmm. He's been invited there to sing at the East German Cultural Festival, which we learn is actually a distraction so that the East German government, whose slogan is better government through intimidation.
They have like a letterhead.
Yeah, it's very cute. They're going to use this as a distraction. So whilst all the NATO submarines are coincidentally in the Strait of Gibraltar the same weekend, they're going to set off some kind of weapon and then take over the world.
It's not explained because it doesn't really need to be.
But there's also, there is an undercover allied secret agent in East Germany, like by Omar Sharif, no less.
Omar Sharif, absolutely chewing the furniture throughout this entire.
Looking great.
Looking fantastic. Enjoying himself.
And they make him do such silly things. He's a serious actor.
Yeah, fucking noted, beautifully talented Egyptian actor Omar Sharif in this, doing shit like getting fucking blue dye squirted into his face by a lapel.
They got so many like serious actors for this. This was Peter Cushing's last film role.
Oh my god.
And in that, Peter Cushing wears like a facial prosthesis for the sake of one sight gag that he keeps on the whole scene. And all of his dialogue is backwards. Yeah.
It's very good.
We'll get to that scene because it's incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, incidentally, the bit with Omar Sharif, Agent Cedric, is my favorite joke in this movie, which is the Nazi general in command is informed that this guy is like spying on them, and they found him on the express train, and he takes the note that he's given and he rubber stamps it with a rubber stamp that says "find him and kill him."
It's so good.
I want one of those so badly.
That's KJB merch, baby.
It's so good.
Genuinely, yeah, I want one. I think it would save a lot of time in the course of this podcast if I could just be like stamp. Yeah. So
they go to East Germany, and there's an interesting gag about the East German women's Olympic team.
Oh yeah, this is interesting. Yeah, in order to like inaugurate the festival, the East German women's Olympic team will present them with medals, and out come several very large men in bad drag, is the way I would describe it. And this is
ripped guys.
This is like not even a trans joke exactly.
Well, they hadn't figured out that trans women existed in 1984.
No, we didn't know about us.
Wouldn't it be funny if women were huge?
This is a joke about this is sort of still disputed to this day, the extent to which the Soviet Union and East Germany and other Eastern Bloc countries gave female athletes steroids and testosterone in order to make them perform better. But it was a recurring rumor in the West, to the point that the press sisters, these twin sisters who competed in, I think, shot put for the USSR, would fully just call the press brothers in Western media. And absolutely no evidence of this other than the fact that they looked quite manly, I guess. But like,
the shot putters. So yeah, like... yeah,
find me a sort of small, waifish Olympic shot put athlete.
Mm-hmm. Twink shot putter.
Well, now we're talking, yeah. But no, it was this thing that absolutely dogged the Soviet and East German Olympic programs.
I think they reference it in Rocky IV as well, don't they? Mm-hmm. Not with a woman, but they give Ivan Drago the, like, it's revealed that the Soviets are cheating by injecting him with shit. Whereas Rocky trains the old fashioned way by just like
running up and down,
pounding
some steps
meat.
And yeah, punching meat. Also, you can still see this today. Like, it's now still Russia, albeit somewhat better sourced for them cheating. But like, China also, like, a lot of the time in the Olympics, there'll be aspersions cast on Chinese athletes on the basis that, well, who knows what's going on behind the fucking Iron Curtain or the Great Wall, that they might just be shooting them full of whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an interesting sort of thing. Actually, there's a lot in this movie that dates it, both in like good and bad ways.
There's the occasional joke which just like makes no sense now at all. Like there's one when Nick says something in German to the guy on the train, and then the guy like cocks his gun, and the manager's like, "What did you say?" And he says, "Oh, I just told him I signed him up to the Montgomery Ward mailing list." And a thing that I don't know what that is, but it had the cadence
the
of a joke.
It's a spam 1980. Joke from 1980.
Which is the kind of shit that really gets my goose, let me tell you that for a fact.
That's ontology.
Putin and Holloway.
There's another bit where a spy is caught and he's shot, and as he's dying he takes some papers out from his jacket and burns them, but it's a letter from the publisher's clearinghouse, and it's just like, this must have been topical at the time, because
it's one of those things where like there's just jokes like maybe every 3 to 4 seconds. So some of them will not land. Some of them are not funny at all.
But they don't have to.
And
no, because they don't stop.
Jokes.
This movie is like almost every single line.
This movie is like an hour 20, slightly less, I think. And there is not a wasted second in it.
Nick is having his black tie dinner, and he sees this lady at the entrance being pursued by the police. And she's very sexy. Normally, in order to get a jawline like that, you'd have to look at a trans woman. But she's about to be arrested.
Everyone in this movie has a trans woman's jawline.
I'm hoping there's going to be a third one of those, because we all know how comedy works.
Yeah.
So let's
Don't worry, Dev. I've got to go. You know what it is. He sees this sexy lady. Being pursued by the police, and the guy's like, "I can't let you in. You know, you're not. This is a private party." And Nick's like, "Oh, it's okay. She's with me," and that like helps her out. So he's like a heroic himbo, they kind of have a bit of a flirtatious dance. Scene. He's so hot. There's a very funny line where
absolutely suck this nut from the back.
The dancing bit is interesting.
Yes, that's kind of. It's not even really a joke. It's just like a very visually interesting sequence. Where they're having normal dialogue, and they're dancing together. And in a James Bond film, it would be kind of like sexy slow dancing. But just their dancing gets more and more elaborate and in sync with everyone else. It's kind of slightly weird. There's a line I love where she says, "Oh, you're American. Oh, my father was born in America, but fortunately he escaped," which is
Yeah, he said he escaped by hot air balloon during the Carter presidency.
Yeah, which makes it a Democrat joke, which is great. They get one in on Reagan later, but they get a little joke in at the expense of Jimmy Carter.
Balance, BBC balance, baby.
Yeah, she kind of like lectures him in a sort of comic way about how Americans don't appreciate their freedom, which... Mm. I don't know. That was interesting because it was like I'm not sure quite what they were going for here. Was it just to have that juxtaposition while they're dancing in a kind of comedic way? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Hmm. Welcome to Kill James Bond, the podcast where we don't understand movies.
We just watch this movie like I don't get it. What's going on here?
Yeah. Okay. So oh my god, that train's coming right at us.
But there's a whilst they're at this dinner, one of the East German military guys, he has a guy from the Soviet Union there who's a very famous singer, and they say, oh, like this comrade Belishnikov is going to sing for us, and the MC on this kind of black tie dinner party stage announces a musician, and there's a sort of comedy of errors where Nick thinks that they're about to introduce him, and he gets up and does this incredible like song. We should talk about the songs in this movie, because Val Kilmer did all his own singing.
Yeah, he put out a record after this.
Normally done as well.
The soundtrack.
And he's good.
Yeah,
he does.
He does Tutti Frutti, and it's and brings the house down. And it's
yeah, he
very
brings rock and roll
well
to East Germany. Everyone loves it. Like, it's really good.
Yeah,
you know that new sound you've been looking for. I don't know. I haven't actually watched it.
I was also thinking of Back to the Future there. Maybe you're not ready for this yet, but your grandkids are going to love it.
Yeah, it was kind of similar vibe, yeah. And meanwhile, the sexy lady, her name is Hillary. She escapes.
Which she says is German for she whose bosoms defy gravity.
More like Hillary. Right.
Just chilling in East Germany.
Just chilling in East Germany.
But they go to the ballet, and all the male, there's a visual gag where all the male ballet dancers have like enormous, enormous dicks that you can see through their tights. And normally, in order to see dicks that big, you'd have to look at a trans woman.
There she is.
One of these days I'm going to stop pointing out when you do set up reminder.
Boom.
I'm never going to.
Fucking professional writing. That's how we do it.
Yeah, you're going to love my next video. Today.
My next video, there's like a, it's like so clearly telegraphed ever. I'm like, this is going to be the running joke for the video. It's good. You know, I do this, listeners, I do this so that it gives you the illusion of structure.
Mm. Oh, and incidentally, Omar Sharif at this point gets killed, we think. He gets crushed like in Goldfinger. They just drive him in a car and then they dump him in a car crusher. And then he escapes in his cubed car to Hillary's room.
Yeah. Omar Sharif, legendary,
he's like in a car.
Yeah.
Legendary Egyptian actor Omar Sharif.
They put him through so much shit for this.
Dressed as a compacted car.
Doing like cheap sex jokes involving an aerial. Yeah. It's great. It's great.
Omar's like contact in East Germany is this guy who has the most ridiculous like code phrases.
Oh yeah, I have one. Well, in fact, we use one for the thing. They're all sports themed, but here's the other one.
Do you know any good white basketball players?
There are no good white basketball players, my friend.
Just
in the women's basketball, I always bet against the heterosexuals.
Which, I mean, is fully just like, you know, do you have a match? I use a lighter, that's better still. Shit.
Yeah, it's not better. It's not worse even than fucking the Bond ones, so whatever.
But once again, Nick sees Hillary in trouble with the police and goes to help her out. And he winds up, she escapes, but he winds up getting arrested. And then
because he kills a cop.
He knocks a
cop over the edge of the balcony. And then later on, and the reason why I remember that he kills this cop is the gag that we get later on, which is this.
What is the condition of Sergeant Kruger? Yes, I see. Well, let me know if there's any change in his condition. He's dead.
It's one of those things, he doesn't even like really kill this cop. He just like hits him and the guy like fucking just walks straight off the edge of the opera balcony.
Yeah. And then they try to escape from the opera being pursued by the police, and it is just literally, it's sight gags like that.
Absolutely.
They try to like make their way out through a door marked janitor, and they open it and there's just a janitor there. So they then go to the prop room, which is a room full of propellers. It's like,
just
yeah, this is the thing. You either like this shit, or you like at some point it just starts wearing on you.
Oh, I can't imagine that, because to me it is just the most fun shit ever. And like, so we'll talk a little bit. Well, no, let's talk about Police Squad. Let's take a diversion and talk about Police Squad.
Oh, please.
Police Squad was a 1982 TV series made by the same people. It was cancelled after only 6 episodes. It starred Leslie Nielsen and was later adapted into the Naked Gun films.
Listeners, you may have seen it.
Naked Gun was a lot more slapstick. There was a lot like, it was a lot more crude. Police Squad was a lot more stuff like this, a lot more sight gags, a lot of very like clever, like one-liners and tricks using the camera and so on. And it was cancelled after 6 episodes.
My favorite Police Squad joke, who are you and how did you get in here? I'm a locksmith and I'm a locksmith.
Mm-hmm. It also contains my favorite joke of all time, which is when two characters say, let's go outside and discuss this in the Japanese garden. And they walk outside and there's a bunch of Japanese people standing around in pots. It's just never mentioned. It just fucking kills me every time.
That's worth flagging up, because the kind of humor in this is like
absurd,
insane shit happening while all characters are remaining completely serious throughout. And it wouldn't work if they in any way drew attention to the ridiculous shit that's going on. Like there's one point in Top Secret where they're in like a park and there's just a massive statue of a pigeon behind them and like tiny little guys land on it halfway through the scene. And it's like, it's just happening in the background. Like, it doesn't play on anything that's actually happening in the scene. It doesn't bring the narrative forward, but it's like, this is a joke. Would you like some more? Would you like 45 more?
We got loads.
Oh, we got so fucking many.
The reason why I liked Airplane and why I liked Police Squad and why I liked The Naked Gun is partly because I haven't seen them in years, so I don't know if I'm going to enjoy them if I revisit them.
That's also where I'm at.
Yeah, because I remembered liking this when I saw it, but I was a kid, and when I rewatched it, I don't know if I was just in a bad mood or something, but it just did nothing for me this time. And I don't know whether that's because of sort of rose-tinted glasses, or whether it's because you don't have Leslie Nielsen in this movie. Because Leslie Nielsen's gift was to play all of this shit absolutely straight. And Val Kilmer does fine in this movie, but he doesn't really get the chance because he's too much of a himbo.
And they haven't perfected the formula just yet.
Yeah, all of the best jokes, all of the jokes that made me laugh the hardest are given to these sort of incredibly dignified character actors who are just able to play it totally straight. So, like, Nick gets arrested, right, helping Hillary to escape. And his manager comes to visit him in prison. And what his manager says to him made me laugh the hardest out of any line in this movie.
Which, it's so good.
Which is this, and it's just delivered perfectly.
I've tried everything. The embassy, the German government, consulate. I even talked to the UN ambassador. It's no use. I just can't bring my wife to orgasm.
Upon
which Val Kilmer replies by giving him this fucking colossal dildo.
The anal intruder, which is like a jackhammer
from the floor.
Yeah.
It's played absolutely straight. Like, Dave, you hit the nail on the head earlier on. There's no character in this whose job it is to, like, signal to the audience that there is a joke. Everyone is the straight man. And I think in a way, so I contrast this very much to something like The Good Place, which people, because of Philosophy Tube, people keep telling me to watch. And I watched a couple of episodes of and really didn't like it because there's this, like, there's this recurring thing in American TV shows where a character will say the joke and then the other character will respond, "Did you just say joke?" And then you guys get a shot of the first character and a shot of the second character, and they do a kind of read, and then they continue the scene. And I'm like, fucking get on with it! Like, you don't need to, like, waste my fucking... Just do the joke. Bam, 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 bam. Joke, joke, joke. Just do it. Like,
if the fucking audience don't register that it's a joke, or they don't get it, or they don't find it funny, it doesn't fucking help to be like, this was a joke.
That's their own fucking fault.
Do you see that it was a joke? Like, it doesn't
They should turn off and watch something else. Like, they suck. Like, no, but so... And that's why...
Think of, like, any scenario, right? You tell a joke, there are three things that can happen. A, the audience get it, they think it's funny. B, the audience get it, they don't think it was funny. Or C, the audience don't get it. Literally none of those scenarios are improved by drawing attention back to the joke and being like, wasn't that funny, guys? Do you want to give that another go? Because in the situation where you understood and you thought it was funny, you're going to kill the joke by pointing it out again. If you saw it and you didn't think it was funny, you're going to bore the shit out of the guy watching. And then if they don't get it, it doesn't help. Just move on. Do another joke.
Yeah.
But this is scenario D. Scenario D is that the audience aren't paying attention because they be on their damn phones. And that's why I think they do be on their phones. They're always on the phone. What if phones, but too much? And that's why I think this sort of comedy like couldn't be made now. And that's also why Police Squad was cancelled. Because if you are not like paying attention 100% to this, and like, then you are going to miss everything. And I know this because in the first 10 minutes of rewatching this film, I tried to paint my toenails and I was like, I can't do both at the same time. Like, you have to sit down and watch this film. And this ended up like, so at university, I don't think I've ever told this story before. At university, I was involved in a sketch comedy group. And I used to write shit that was exactly like this. No, it wasn't the full. God, I wasn't at Cambridge. What do you think I am?
I was
at St Andrews, the University of the Working Class.
I think that's libel, but I said you were at Cambridge.
No, my brother was at Cambridge. I used to write stuff that was exactly like this. And like a lot of my sketches that I wrote were about police detectives. And I had one where a police detective came in and said, "Hello, I'm Detective Constable David Clark, DC. Call me DC, DC, DC." And then just, like, immediately moved on. And then it was just like, "We searched the apartment before you arrived. Any drugs? No, thanks. I had some before I came. Any semen? No, thanks. I had some after I came." And it was all just like, it was all shit like this. And like, it either bombed or like absolutely brought the house down, depending on whether the audience had their fucking eyes open or not. Like, and that's what it still informs the way I write in Philosophy Tube today, where I'm like, I'm not going to telegraph what the joke is. Like, you got to fucking watch. Fuck you.
I'm completely with you. I ran into this exact problem because usually I have a big notepad. I'm a fucking boomer. So I have a little physical notepad that I write on while I watch these movies. And I was like looking down to finish writing a sentence and then I'd look back up and I'd miss like four jokes.
Yeah.
So I got to the point where, I stopped making notes because I realized the plot was ancillary. But also, actually all of my notes are about what Val Kilmer could do to me. Which we'll get to.
Yeah, if you just want to read those into the record.
Yeah, I've said he could suck this nut from the back.
Mm-hmm.
I've said that he could chuff my dick and balls like a cigar.
Uh-huh.
I've said that he could prune me off, and I don't know what I meant by that.
I presume that's like sucking you off until like your dick takes on the sort of prune
Yeah, like
text.
I've been in the bath too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I've been in Val Kilmer's mouth too long.
Mm.
But also... I had to keep pausing it. If I was going to make a note, which was about what Val Kilmer could do to me, I had to pause the film and then make it and restart it again because I couldn't do the thing I usually did.
Imagine watching this in a cinema too. Imagine watching this in a movie theater.
Oh, that'd be embarrassing because I was rock solid.
I just mean in terms of like, you can't pause, you can't go back. You're going to like miss about half of this shit if you're distracted. If you brought pick and mix to this movie,
You're fucked.
Yeah, you're fucked.
Yeah. It's just going to be like a normal film to you that isn't funny.
I'm watching Top Secret in a cinema. I keep leaning across to my date and being like, "Hey, Val Kilmer could fuck me." Well, that's actually not true. I would fuck Val Kilmer. I don't think Val Kilmer could fuck me.
Mm. And your date, Val Kilmer, is like, "I know." And then he's like, "Also, I was in Batman."
So I was in Top
Gun. And now I'm like 70 years old. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Again, this is another one of those situations. I'm watching an old film. It's like what I said about Diana Rigg on the last three episodes.
Aging is fake. Talking does not happen. If you're in a movie, you stay the age that you were in that movie forever until I see you in another movie, and then you're that age.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right. It's like Abby in my head is always wearing the outfit that she wore in the last Philosophy Tube video.
To be fair, those outfits do keep getting better as well, so that's not a problem.
Thank you.
The fucking collar on this last one was insane.
Mwah.
I think in the next one, which will hopefully be out by the time this comes out, I'm just going to be dressed as the Riddler.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
What are we here to talk about? Nick gets tortured because now we've shifted genres. We've shifted out of the spy movie and into the war movie. And
I'm going to do the thing I said I would never do and just explain a joke to the audience. But like, they go, the guy who comes to tell him that he can't make his wife come is like, yeah, we're gonna get you out. There's nothing to worry about. And in the next scene, Nick is being led out by a priest who is just speaking Latin. He's not saying anything. Corpus, he's just saying Latin phrases.
Omnia Gallica divisus in partes tres.
Just like saying shit from like first year Latin.
Yeah.
And then they get into an electric chair room. They like off screen pull the fucking big
throw
lever,
the switch. Yeah.
And then it cuts and the Catholic priest has been electrocuted in a chair. And then they do the interrogation of and it's like, that's a good scene, eh?
Yeah, and it is just fully that. Like, we have ways of making you talk kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So they have him savagely beaten
by two guys,
one of whom is blind and the other whom is described as an imbecile who only believes what he reads in the New York Post. And they
biting 80s bit.
Yeah, just grab him by the elbows and they like start punching him and he blacks out and he like has a sort of a dream, a nightmare where he's like, boy, I'm late for school. It's the day of my final exam and I haven't revised. And so he wakes up with these two guys whipping him and he's like, oh, thank God.
that must have been like a day's worth of filming. And like a change of costume, a change of set, like music for that scene. Like they've so much effort into this one like 10-second gag.
This is an $8 million budget movie. It came in at like $1 million under budget too. So
really?
Everything in here was just fucking improvised, I think. Which is incredible.
Well,
that's so good.
It's worth talking about what you flag up there, Abby, because like one of the major thoughts I had while watching this is just like literally, and I'm going to sound like a boomer here, but they straight up don't make movies like this anymore.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that flagged that to me is
they'd be on the damn phone.
They will be on a damn phone. They'd be on their damn computer doing CG is what they'd be doing.
They'd be recording podcasts.
They'd be
explaining your movie.
Come on. I'm doing my best here. there's a scene where after the customs checkpoint, right at the very start, like the shot is such, it's Val Kilmer and then the window, and you see like everything start to go past as if they were pulling off in a train, but then you see that actually the whole customs checkpoint is itself a train that is going the other direction.
Yeah,
and they made that. They did a set for like a 2-second joke.
They have a sign on the back of that simply says Kustomswagen, which I like a lot.
It's like, and like that includes, it's like the whole thing. So it's like a bench. There's an old woman sat on the bench. There's like a fucking consulary stand. And then it just goes past. And it's like, they wouldn't do that now.
So Nick escapes. Nick escapes by the simple expedient of a series of sight gags, which is the only way that anything progresses in this movie.
The only way the plot moves forward.
Yeah, he kicks out a grate and then he comes out of another grate in the same room. So he tries a third grate and comes out of the toilet and then slides into a sort of prison laboratory where he encounters Dr. Paul Flemond. I think that's his name. Who is this boffin who has been forced to design a mine, a naval mine, because the East Germans have his daughter, Hillary, whom we have met. And Nick tries to make good his escape by accidentally activating the mine which we are told can like draw itself to submarines miles away.
Yeah.
which draws a submarine through the... Again, they shot this. They did a practical effect submarine to just demolish a fake wall to get magnetized to this mine.
Which, and the prison is like miles inland as well. Like he flips the switch and a fucking submarine prow just comes through.
Yeah, and it's like it's all of the jokes are structured like this, of the like one more thing after you expect it. So the guards burst in with guns and the doctor puts his hands up and Nick puts his hands up and then a guy pops the hatch on the submarine and puts his hands up. It's just it's knowing exactly when you can push it that little bit further, which I really appreciate.
But they decide that they can't execute him because it would attract too much negative attention from the press. So they force him to play at the concert anyway, which is like very, very Elvis. There's like hundreds of girls screaming in the crowd. Some of them have banners which are written in German accented English. So somebody has a banner that says Welcome Nick. There's a weird moment where he gets a girl up on stage and is like singing to her like a lot of singers do. But she's very, very young in a way that now, like being on the other side of the R. Kelly
There's a joke at the very beginning of this movie where Nick's been practicing his German and his manager says, what have you learned? And he says, Ist deine Tochter 18? Is your daughter 18? Which, now. But that's, that. I think for 1980, that's just like, oh, he's a rock star. That's cool. That's just what they're like. Which, then again, this isn't the biggest misstep that Zucker Abraham Zucker had because they did manage to cast O.J. Simpson in two Naked Gun movies.
Ooh, yeah.
He's good in those movies, to be fair to him. Unfortunately, he's quite good in those movies.
Yeah, he's very good.
You have to hand it to him. Yeah.
I hate to hand it to him.
There's a running gag where he keeps like getting the shit kicked out of him, which is, I suppose, quite satisfying.
Oh, it's quite good, yeah.
Yeah. So Nick and Hillary, they hide out in Peter Cushing's Swedish antiquarian bookshop.
Oh my god. This
whole scene is filmed backwards.
Yeah, it's genuinely, I think, one of the most incredible sequences I've ever seen put to film. And they actually just did it.
Yeah, they just shot this whole thing backwards. They shoot backwards, them coming in, speaking in backwards English to Peter Cushing, this member of the resistance who is going to lead them to the resistance, because of a sight gag. Like, there's a bit in when they come in where he has a magnifying glass up to his face, so one of his eyes is really big, and then he puts the magnifying glass down, and his eye is still like that.
He just has that.
Yeah.
Just put a prosthesis on Peter Cushing, legendary actor Peter Cushing.
Yeah, they talked Peter Cushing into putting the shit on his face and keeping it there while he walked around a bookstore backwards. And so he agrees to take them to the leader of the resistance, and they can stay in the loft, which is up a fire pole. So they slide up it to end the scene.
Yeah, they do a bunch of bits that are entirely predicated on the fact the scene is shot backwards. Like, great, thanks, mate. He keeps like throwing the books onto the top shelf perfectly, which is obviously because it's filmed backwards, and he's just catching them as they fall. And then it's like,
so in order to film this scene,
up this fire pole, they go,
there's like a dog that runs across backwards. But like, in order to film this scene, the actors had to do everything backwards. And then they just, as it were, played the film, and it would have been film, in reverse. And the scene is structured so that the longer it goes on, the more clear this becomes. And it's honestly like mesmerizing and incredible to watch, and must have taken so much rehearsal, because to be able to like do simple things like shake hands with somebody backwards just must have taken such like clever stuff. And there's one point where like Val Kilmer like pops his collar and then like throws the book, and like to do all of that in a realistic looking way backwards must have taken so much effort. all in again, service of the gag that it's a Swedish bookstore and that, like, Swedish sounds weird, so therefore backwards. Like, it's it's incredible.
It's not a plot advancing bit. It's literally just, they were like, wouldn't it be funny if we did this whole thing backwards? Anyway, let's spend several days filming this backwards.
It's such an effort post. It's not even the first time in this film they do it. There's another one later on, which we'll get to. But oh my God.
You know what I think this is in general? I think this is like a change in the valuation of jokes. Because I think movies now, they'll put them in, but they really want you to notice them, as you say, because people will be on their phones or for whatever other reason. So they'll really, like, be heavy-handed with them. Whereas this movie, they'll just fully, like, toss them out there as if they're nothing. Because they're, even when they're not easy to make, it's a very, like, vaudeville almost. It reminds me of Marx Brothers movies, where it's just like, we know that this is silly. And we're not taking this seriously either. That was a real change of pace.
Nobody quips. Nobody has like a, I guess they're Nazis now. Like,
Joss Whedon is not here and neither is his dialogue.
I mean, after the 2008 financial crash, the value of, I mean, jokes just got a lot more expensive. Like, the cost of jokes has gone up so much. I mean, like, used to be, I mean, when our parents were kids, you used to be able to get, like, jokes for, like, £9,000. But now it's honestly, like, the down payment on a joke is huge.
Yeah, I'm renting my jokes.
Used to be able to walk into a fucking bookstore and pick up, like, a couple of sweets, a magazine for, like, 10p. And you can't fucking do that shit anymore because they got security cameras all over the place.
Did you just say they've got security cameras all over the place? Do you mean that you were stealing? Shot. Reaction shot. Shot. Reaction shot. Anyway,
didn't pay for them.
Bazinga.
Comedy these days is it's actually just bad. It's straight up not good anymore. I sound like a boomer every time I say it, but like, I haven't seen a funny film in the last like 10 years.
Reject modernity, embrace tradition.
Embrace Val Kilmer.
This is also my critique of this movie, though, is that it is a boomer-ass movie. It's got boomer jokes. Even when they're funny, all of the time when they're not, they are, like, they're still boomer mentality jokes, like the Carter administration being funny. And it's like, yeah, fair enough, I guess. But
well, yeah, I mean, it's jokes for boomers because it's a boomer movie.
Having an East German woman say, oh, my father was born in America, but fortunately he escaped. Like, that's still funny. Like, that's a funny sentiment. I don't know who Carter is, but...
Never heard of him.
Some peanut guy.
He died recently. I don't know anything about that guy. Don't know if that's good or not.
There's a plot important point where...
Hillary and Nick sleep together.
She recounts a story of how when she was a child, she was trapped on a desert island with a guy named Nigel... and then subsequently he was lost at sea and she was rescued.
And Nigel is this ripped guy.
Yeah. Nick says that his mum left him in a department store and then he was subsequently raised in a department store by the staff, which is like another somewhat silly idea.
Yeah, they raised him as their own, which I like a lot.
Yeah. So they go to meet the resistance on a potato farm. There's a brilliant line.
Complete
which again,
with the joke. Oh, Christ.
I love it.
Is this the potato farm?
Yes, I am
the
potato. Potato.
This is the kind of common, lowest common denominator humor that I am all for.
It gets lower. So we meet the resistance. Good. And then we simply forget that we are in Germany because the resistance are all French guys because it's a war movie and that, so the French resistance. Yeah.
They have to be. And they're all just named shit like Sacre Bleu.
Deja vu.
Toilette. Avant-garde. Like Latrine. There's a guy called Latrine. There's a guy called Latrine who is just like wrapped in bandages and he just is wrapped in bandages for the entire movie. He keeps like coming into scenes as if he's just been shot, but in reality he literally is just like that
just like
the whole
that.
Time.
There's a very, very like buff black guy who's like they pan across and they introduce everybody and he's there and like he's so tough, he's smoking a cigar and then he just like eats the cigar.
Yeah, because it's like it's a Mr. T gag, right? But that guy's name is Chocolate Mousse.
Yeah, because a bunch of them have like food names, and then it's like, yeah, this is Chocolate Mousse.
That guy was also in Raiders of the Lost Ark, incidentally. That actor,
a better movie.
Yeah,
and then the leader of the resistance steps out, and my God. It's Nigel, the guy from the flashback, who is dressed exactly as he was in the flashback. So he's like wearing a fucking shell necklace and is completely nude otherwise.
Nigel the Torch, with like this huge shock of blonde hair, played by Christopher Villiers. Like very upper class British accent.
Weird mismatch between the body and the voice. Because he's like incredibly cut, but also a posh Brit. He's got the voice of a gammon, but the bod of an Abercrombie and Fitch model. It's very strange.
I think you're just describing like a rower.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
No, that's fine. Anyway, Hillary sees him and is immediately like, okay, first of all, I grew up with him, and also, that's also a weird bit. They grew up together and then they like... I think that is like explored their strange new feelings together is the line, and it's
on
like,
the desert island. On the desert island.
That's right.
And so when she sees him, she immediately like takes him back, and this makes Nick jealous. But he agrees to help them break her father out of Flugendorf prison. At which point it is time for a shootout. Which is, again, just pitched really well. The house is surrounded by Nazis, and there's a lot of, like, punching out windows and then shooting through them, which is, of course, fertile territory for sight gags, so...
Oh, they punch these windows so bad.
Yeah, like, there's one guy who can't get his window to punch, so he, like, bends his gun on it. And you see later it cuts back to him. He's trying to like hit it with a sledgehammer, and the hammerhead breaks off.
There's a bit where fuck. Describing sight gags has got to be the worst way to take in a joke. But I'm gonna do it. There's a bit where Val Kilmer's character he shoots out one window, and it leaves like a perfect circle in the middle, and then he ducks down and he comes back up, and another one of the windows has been shot out with an X, so he does another circle and goes back down, comes back up, there's another X, and he completes his three, and then sort of like pops his collar a little and struts slightly.
So they escape to their pizza house.
Which is literally just like an American diner.
Yeah. Where the resistance discover that they have a traitor amongst them. Someone has been sending the Germans secret messages telling them their plans. And so suspicion falls on Nick.
The way they introduce the traitor being among their midst what's his name?
Latrine.
Fuck. Latrine runs in and he like puts this dead carrier pigeon on the table and he goes, "The traitor in our midst." And Deja Vu's like, "Well done taking care of him." Like, no, that is, this is a pigeon, which is the one case of them being like, this is the joke. Like they don't do it in any other scene. And that's why
that's not true. There is another one where Hillary goes, I know it sounds bad. It sounds like a bad movie. And then both of them stare at the camera.
It's slightly too long as well.
Yeah.
A little bit too, but when you have like 500 jokes, there'll be one miss.
I suspect Nick of being the spy or the traitor, and in order to prove that he's not, he has to sing a song.
Yes,
and Val Kilmer really dances. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they think that he's Mel Torme, who I don't know who that is.
Welcome to the podcast where we don't understand boomer jokes.
Well, I think
the
thing is two fans of Nick come up to him, and in order to avoid like blowing his cover, he gives them a fake name, and then they're like, "Well, how do we know that you aren't literally just this fake guy? How do we actually know?"
Mel Torme was like a sort of a crooner, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he brings the house down once again, and then they.
You could bring my pants down. Thanks.
Yeah, anytime. So they infiltrate the this prison, but in order to get there, they have to drop by parachute. And there's this great bit where Nick and Hillary have to sort of make up and reconcile while they're both parachuting next to each other. And it does the, like, pan... Because, like, it's a joke that OSS makes, too, when OSS and the princess are fucking, and it just pans away from them to a fireplace, but it's got a mirror above it. In this case, it pans to a fireplace, which is also coming down on a parachute.
Well, I remember the version in OSS Sandy set where they, as they're like kissing on the bed, the camera pans over and like it turns out there's a mirror and like they're just fucking in a very undignified way, and then the camera like suddenly cuts away.
The camera like panickedly pulls back down. Yeah. There's one of these earlier in this movie, the first time Nick and Hillary have sex, yeah, where it like pans across to a fireplace and then they like fall onto the floor still in the shot, and it like pans across to a second fireplace. Which is anyway, you ever heard of sight gags? You should watch the movie Top Secret.
Yeah.
Val Kilmer.
It's the highest form of comedy.
Of very serious.
So they plan their assault on the prison to free Hillary's nerd scientist father, and the sight gag in this one is entirely that as Nigel is sketching out the plan on like a sand table on the floor, it's just an increasingly more elaborate scale model to the point where it's got like a little model train running through it. The plan is they're going to dress up as like a pantomime cow, front half and back half, and sneak their way in thusly, then break away, cut the power, and the others are gonna break in.
And we get the very famous, possibly the most memorable sight gag of the whole film, which you've probably seen GIF'd time and again, listeners, which is when Nick crawls through the fence and he looks up and there's like a pair of boots and there's like a scary cord and he's like, oh, and if the shot like pulls back and it's just a pair of boots standing in the field.
Empty boots.
He's like, yeah, oh my God.
Like, oh my God, it just keeps going. It's so silly. Because it's actually using the language of film to create the comedy. Because in real life, Nick would instantly be able to see that. But it's almost like nothing outside of the frame exists. So once the frame expands and we, the audience, see that it's just a pair of boots, then the characters know it. And like using the language of film to do stuff like that is, again, the kind of joke that I've not seen that much of. And it's the kind of thing that like Police Squad did a lot of as well. I remember a scene in Police Squad where two characters were talking about a car accident. One said, oh yeah, the tow truck's on its way. And then about 2 minutes later, an enormous truck shaped like a toe drives past in the background, completely unremarked. And like, that's the kind of thing you just like wouldn't fucking see now, because like they want to show, they want you to telegraph the joke. Like they want you to definitely not miss anything.
It's a cartoon joke though. Like the sort of the laws of physics not applying is fully, it's Looney Tunes. It's Wile E. Coyote goes over the ravine and then he doesn't start falling until he notices that there's no ground under him. It's the same thing. It really is that kind of like older kind of comedy.
There's one thing in, I think it's in a Naked Gun movie that I always think of when I think about these kind of things. It's like they're inside the police headquarters building. They're talking and then they're like, all right, well, let's go through to the lab. And like one of them opens the door and steps through, whereas like the camera pulls back slightly and the other guy just steps around the facade wall that they put up on set. And it's just unremarked upon. And then afterwards there are other guys just doing that as well. And it's like...
That is Police Squad. I know the scene you mean. Like, it's so good.
Yeah, it's so fucking good. Now, Nick and one of the guys who we should have written his name down, actually, because he does continue to come up. One of the French resistance guys are Ducroix. In the cow. Ducroix, you're right.
Ducroix and Nigel. Nigel, the leader, yeah.
I'm going to call them both an N. Ridiculous for me to keep track of this much. They're in the cow and they make their way in, and the way you can tell that it's a cow, because they just use real footage of a cow, but
yeah,
the cow is wearing
boots on a cow, which is again like
it's adorable.
They didn't have to do this. And it's one of those things where it's like, the budget for this, very, very low, four, like two pairs of boots, but like, the expense in terms of how long it took and the aggravation of convincing this poor fucking cow to go where you want it to for all of these shots must have been immense.
There's also a bit where they're heading over to the fucking like outhouse to turn off the power, and then a calf comes over and starts suckling on the cow that is in reality Nick and
a lot of cow sex jokes in this movie.
A remarkable amount of cow sex jokes. And Nick's like, oh, because he's the back half. He's like, oh. The other guy's like, should we get on with it? And he's like, why are you in such a bloody hurry? Can't we just enjoy ourselves for a minute?
Getting sucked off by a cow. That's what they want these days. Later gets mounted by a bull. And in the next scene, he's walking funny.
Yeah, one of those things that, again, they don't really tend to do that these days, which is having the villain of your film be raped by an animal.
No.
Which was actually quite a thing.
Surprisingly common. Yeah.
Yeah, remarkably so.
In Trading Places, it's a fucking gorilla.
Yeah, right? I mean, how recent do you reckon we could get away with that as like the punchline of a movie is?
Ooh, it's got, I think it must have died out in the 90s, like a lot of these things.
I think you could have gone up to early 2000s if it was off-screen and implied.
It's not the only such thing that happens to Nigel, because earlier on she says, oh, why did you leave the desert island? And he says, oh, I was picked up by a boat full of people. They took advantage of me in ways that you can't possibly imagine. And she hugs him and says, oh, gosh, it must have been awful. And he does this kind of like sly look like, well, it could be interpreted either way, right? One way of interpreting it is like, haha, this was a lie and she fell for it, because in fact, as we now discover, Nigel is the traitor and he was picked up by the East German communist Nazis. But the other way of interpreting it is, she says, oh, that must have been awful, and he's like, oh my gosh,
no, it's fully just him remembering having had it. Gay sex and just liking it.
Yeah,
which you should do.
It's implied
chat,
that he is
audience.
Turned both gay and evil, and that those two things are like the same thing, which is like kind of homophobic. But he's turned gay, evil, and communist by
which is
like,
based.
I mean, first of all, same.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's just the two of
those,
it
didn't happen that way.
Yeah. But all three, let's go.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I mean, we have all been turned gay, evil, and communist, but not through that.
No,
that's true.
We were turned gay, evil, and communist by starting a podcast.
Just give it a shot.
Well, I was turned gay, evil, and communist by Jeremy Corbyn, but...
The mad Marxist. Jeremy Corbyn.
Loony leftist.
Anyway, there's a series of sight gags, obviously.
I mean, really, that's the whole summary of this movie. There's a series of sight gags.
This could have been like a 10-minute podcast, which is...
That's the
blurb. Sight gags. Of the other guys breaking into the prison, one of the most notable ones being that it's like the crenellations on a castle, right? And a guy, I think it's Chocolate Moose, sneaks up behind one of the East German Nazi guards, punches him, and he perfectly like raises his arms and slides between two crenellations, falls off of it, and then when he hits the ground, like shatters like porcelain.
Again, making a T-posing porcelain German soldier. That's so much fucking work for one shot.
Even more so than that, like he lands perfectly. His face is upright and unshattered, so you can still see it. And it's like, how many tries did this take?
Yeah, how many fucking porcelains did they make in order to do this? Because you can't just do one take of that.
Speaking of high effort props, there's another sight gag where the general is alerted to the break-in because the phone rings and the phone is in the foreground. The phone is in the foreground, so it's really big. And then he walks over to the phone and it's just a really big phone.
Again, it's
not
the
in the foreground, it's just
cinema.
A giant phone. And then it's immediately followed by the general like scrambling the troops, and then so you see like a guy like waving the troops, and there's like jeeps and motorcycles driving around this corner, and there's like tanks and shit going around the corner, and then it just slowly pans out and it's revealed they're all driving in a circle. It's just so stupid.
Yeah. Nigel makes his betrayal known. He pulls a gun on Dacroix and he tries to betray them. And he takes Hillary hostage, leading to a chase and an underwater bar fight, which is the culminating part of this movie.
The finale of this movie is that Nick catches an entire bar fight underwater. Catches up to Nigel. He knocks him off. Knocks him off the road. They fall into a river together, and then like the two of them are fighting underwater. And then ever so slowly, it reveals that they are in a perfect old west saloon set, completely underwater, and they're like hitting each other. He punches him, and he hits like a bar, which a bartender then rises from and smashes a bottle on his head. And there's like a table full of guys wearing cowboy hats playing cards, and this is all underwater.
It's like, someone fires a gun and a chandelier falls.
How much time did it take to do this?
Oh my god!
There's like saloon, like there's doors that go. Pff, 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 pff. This is the second such sequence that must have taken so much effort.
Yeah. Nick wins the fight and walks out. Walks out through a pair of saloon doors, which there's no attached wall.
They did this with $7 million. You can't shoot a short with $7 million now. Genuinely.
Mm. Well, that's because production staff will be on their damn computer. He just cut it. It was
like they're clearly like okay with it looking cheap, so long as it holds up to the gags. But there's so many of them, and so many of them require these really sort of Byzantine props or camera work that it's
truly elaborate sets.
It's genuinely right. It's so strange, but we get our happy ending. Hillary leaves with Nick. She tells him about like the hope of freedom in East Germany, which has to burn as long as an actor can become president, which is your Reagan joke. And then
a Trump joke actually now, if you wanna.
Yeah, and then the end credits are also jokes. They do not stop. There is a This Space for Rent bit in the end credits. There's a music video in them. It has a bunch of like joke credits. The third man is credited as an actual third man.
They did this with the Naked Gun as well. I think midway through the credits of one of the Naked Gun movies, there's just a recipe for brownies. Just for no reason. Like the filmmakers are following you home, just like giving you more jokes as you
more
go.
Jokes.
Like, trying to
more
leave
jokes.
The cinema, and they're like, no, wait, hang on.
Jokes are incredibly cheap.
These days, you watch the end credits of a movie when you're in a cinema because you're looking for that. You're looking for that little clip after the credits that sets up the next.
They didn't have that expectation then. This is purely for you to, like, the people who. And it goes on normally for just long enough that most people would have left. And there's nothing to suggest that there's going to be, like, there's going to be gags in the credits, but there still are.
And I'm going to confess here, I actually did leave. I didn't watch the full credits. Actually, that's also because it was like 5:59 and we had something to do that evening, so I like I was late for D&D, and I was like, yeah, I imagine these will simply be credits, and then closed.
Yeah, I had to go on a date with Val Kilmer.
God, I wish, Lord Almighty.
Well, I am really very happy that we talked about this film.
Oh, me too. I did not enjoy it, which is like, it makes me feel terrible now, because clearly you really did, Abby. And I was just like, I was watching this and it just kind of like, it aged from my memory of it. Because I remember having seen it as a kid and going, oh yeah, that was really funny. And the only conclusion that I can come to now is that it's a funnier movie to recap with your friends than it is to watch. I've enjoyed recording this podcast with my friends more than I enjoyed watching this film.
Abby coming out here and saying she actually didn't have a good time recording this podcast.
No, of course.
No, I had a wonderful time recording this podcast, but this film means a huge amount to me, because the Naked Gun films were like one of the things that my family would sit around and watch. We were all big fans of. And then my middle brother and I, my brother became a stand-up comedian, and his work, he was also the one who was in the Footlights. His sketch comedy work was very much inspired by the Naked Gun and Police Squad. And we kind of bonded of, we like have a bond as brother and sister of enjoying the Police Squad series. And then one Christmas, we discovered that this movie existed. And I think he got me this movie for Christmas and I was like, this is made by the same people who made Police Squad. Like, let's watch it together. And this film and like the Zucker, Abraham Zucker series and style, to me, it's just like, it's a way of connecting with my brother. And that's why I love it so much, is because like, this is our style of humor and it's been so important for both of us as artists.
Fuck you, Alice.
Yeah, okay, first
of
all,
shit.
I'm home.
Stamping on.
Yeah.
okay. I love you.
Thank you, I'm sorry.
I mean, this is the thing, right? Because like, it's been formative for me too. This kind of like Zucker Abraham's comedy, but like, not really this one. Like, I saw it and I liked it, but it was Airplane for me, and then Police Squad and Airplane The Naked Gun. One, yeah. So like, yeah, maybe I am being ungrateful to these guys because I think it's definitely become sort of a sort of part of the foundation of my comedy too. But then my experience of watching this has led me to be like, fuck, shit, I can never watch The Naked Gun ever again. Yeah, because if I do, I'm gonna be a miserable piece of shit about it, just like I was about this. And I can't let that happen. I refuse to like tarnish the memory of those movies. But this one, I don't know. There was something about watching this that I just like, I don't know. It just,
would it make you feel better if Leslie Nielsen was in it?
Probably. And I mean, I have a lot of time for Leslie Nielsen
because that's a real film that exists. You know, that's a real film. That's Spy Hard. Yeah.
Oh fuck! No,
I've
actually
said we should do that at some point.
Well, we should do Spy Hard.
I've thrown some ideas out.
Spy Hard is more of a Bond pastiche than this was. There's not a lot of Bond in this. And I don't know if can we say that we anything about Bond that we got from this movie, or is it just like sort of a ship's passing in the night sort of thing?
This movie puts more effort in than Bond film.
Oh sure. 100%. Easily.
Well, it's not, I mean, the Ken Adams sets, obviously, the prop work in Bond films are good. I mean, this movie, there's not any trans jokes, which is what I'm always terrified of when I try to watch a comedy film that I remember enjoying. We get a lot of, obviously, people going like, hey, you should watch Austin Powers. And I don't
want
to watch
Austin Powers.
I feel like we should.
We'll have to at some point, but I don't want to.
I'm not happy about it because there is like a quite blatant and obvious trans joke in that. To be fair, though, not as bad as the Ace Ventura Pet Detective movie.
Yeah, which we are never going to watch because we have no reason to
do with Bond. Because people often say to me sometimes, like, "Hey, you should watch this movie."
Yeah, but like, I guess this is also the case that, like, me too, because I watched all of these movies precisely one gender ago. And so,
yeah,
like when there's the joke about the East German women's Olympic team, I had to pause it for a second. I was like, okay, is this, which direction is this going in? Where is this coming from? And how bad am I going to feel about this? And then I was like, oh, okay, it's a press sisters joke. But like, yeah, no, I'm for sure it's a minefield.
I mean, the only note I made during the East German women's team was I just wrote, finally, my kind of woman.
With the stubble, yeah.
Oh, that, oh.
But, I mean, that's just me when I skimp on the
Yeah, that's also just me.
Yeah, you're just describing transgender women.
Transgender.
We're allowed to say that, listeners. You're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say that about us.
Unless you are.
We are allowed to say it about ourselves.
Yeah, we're getting cancelled. But this is a bonus one, so they've had to pay us money to listen to it.
Yeah, cancel me. What are you going to do? What have I said that's cancelable ever? Unless you're a fucking bird, there's nothing to be offended by.
I mean, I think that's the true takeaway we can take from this film, which is
you
fuck
can't
the audience,
me.
Pay a fucking attention, stop being on your phone, stop asking us what hauntology is. Like, we will not, we refuse to explain anything.
But are we not also a beneficiary of the same ecosystem that has like come up around not just commentary on movies, but like recaps of movies or TV shows, explainers of them, are we not too guilty of, like, looking too closely at the fucking Bond movies when we should just be telling people to, like, watch them, but watch them properly?
No.
No.
Okay. Never mind.
I'm actually cool.
Oh, that's true. You're very cool.
Thank you. Anyway, thanks for listening to No, I think it actually might be worth ruminating on that point a little bit because...
Nah,
it
probably isn't. Da-da, da-da,
da-da. Any final thoughts from any of you, or is that going to be our sort of finisher?
Yeah, I have one.
Oh, hell yeah, I got one as well. So it's
Bazinga!
I'm gonna come to your house and shoot you with a gun. You horrid woman. You piece of complete shit. Oh, and the fucking thing is, that drop is so loud. It jump scared me with Sheldon. Do you have any thoughts? Abby, can you save this podcast?
No, I think just cut to the Bond theme. Cut to the theme after Bazinga.
I have one final thought, which is that you could put me in a big vat of Val Kilmer's piss and pickle me like a gherkin.